It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Tick. We're just kicking it around. Now, here's two guys that still dream about having cool soccer hair, Andy Swift and Peter Welton.
Well, hi-de-ho, P1s. Welcome to another, but equally very special, World Cup qualifying post-game podcast, U.S. versus Jamaica edition. For those unfamiliar or new here, hi, my name is Peter. Nice to speak to you. Now, my partner, my soccer-talking BFF, Andy, is not available tonight. He's probably very busy watching his Chile and Canada play, or doing something actually of importance. So instead, I've brought to you two of the very best. First, from thirddegree.net, the amazing Buzz Carrick. Come in, Buzz.
Hello, Peter. Thanks for the chance to talk U.S. soccer.
Anytime, man. It's great to have you on, and thank you for being here. And way overdue, long past the time it should have been, always excited to have this guy on, the Dean of Dallas Soccer Media, the awesome Steve Davis. Come in, Steve.
Howdy, gentlemen.
Steve, are you relaxing in your outdoor homemade bar that you post on Instagram photos of all the time?
I'm not, because I'm trying to be professional here. Otherwise, I would be outside swatting mosquitoes and probably enjoying my second beer.
All right. Well, it's the Ticket. It's okay if you want to do that. We would understand.
Fair enough.
All right. So we're recording this on a Tuesday evening after Jamaica won, United States won. We're all going to be in agreement. This was not the performance we all wanted, but Steve, it's probably the performance we should have expected, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yes, what I saw out there was a young team, a talented team that played pretty well for about 20 minutes and then got absolutely punched in the face. And I don't know that they responded particularly well from there. But to come out of there with 1 point, it's not tragic. You know, we always say you win those qualifiers at home, draw on the road, it'll get you to the World Cup.
Buzz, you got any general overview thoughts on the game?
Yeah, this game reminded me that the United States plays in CONCACAF. It was exactly like all those qualifiers we've seen for the last 40 years for some of us, where the U.S. is going on the road against, in this case, Jamaica, which is a pretty quality team from time to time. Particularly, they always have a lot of talent, even if they're not well organized. And sometimes you've got to grind those games out. The U.S. has not been good at grinding out games of late, the last maybe decade or so. And this reminded me of the fact that they are now. And in particular, I think we've gotten back to the philosophy in terms of our soccer fandom in the USA that we now expect to win every game again. And sometimes you have to remember that you are not going to win every game. Sometimes you've got to grind and get a point, and that's what this was to me.
All right. So, Steve, one of the things that I think will be a running narrative, I know you hate the word narrative, the thing that'll get talked about a lot here in the next few days, and this is also what it makes doing this particular podcast difficult, is that we just finished watching the game. We haven't really had any time to soak and think about it or rewatch the game. But my guess is what everybody's going to talk about is, how does a team going from playing like they did against Mexico on Friday night to playing like this against a considerably lesser, at least on paper, lesser Jamaica side? How do those two things math out like that?
Well, first of all, I don't mind the word narrative. It's bad narrative bad media narrative that particularly offends me. Look, you know, it seems like we just don't learn lessons as American soccer fans. For 20 years, man, we've been having the same discussion. I guess maybe more than 20 years now.
Oh, definitely more than that.
haven't we, though?
Yes.
You just cannot get across to people. And one of the problems is we're always developing new American soccer fans, so that you have to keep kind of teaching the same old lessons. So that part's okay. But it's hard to go on the road and win these games. Now, tonight, I looked at a Jamaica team that, my gosh, man, they're running Javon Watson out there, 38-year-old Javon Watson. And, man, he's playing center of the park for them.
Center mid, yes. That's unbelievable.
It's the same thing he played when they were down in Austin playing the U.S. home game there. And then and next to him is a guy that plays in USL Championship. So in that regard, it's a team you look at talent-wise, the United States should dominate this team. But it's CONCACAF. And by the way, it's a young team. We saw that this was the second youngest World Cup qualifying group they ever put out there. So now it's a group that's not really used to playing these games on the road and, you know, on a bad field and in weird places. And, you know, in all sports, home games, away games are just harder. And it's just hard to teach people that, as Buzz just said, you grind out a 2-1 win. I don't think people are a whole lot more happier than they are right now. But that's a great result. And so here we are again, just having the same discussion, man, that we've had for 20 or 25 years.
Buzz, did you have any particular objection to how Berhalter set up the team or his selection for his starting 11?
I had one massive one, and it was related to the question of what was missing, and that was Weston McKennie. Weston has a je ne sais quoi, maybe call it cojones, some kind of thing. He's a talisman for the team, this particular team, the way Clint Dempsey used to be, or the way perhaps Eric Winalda used to be a long time ago, or a guy like Brian McBride, who had a certain toughness and would go into these battles. So that was missing for me. And as much as I love Busio as a player, I think that kid is phenomenal and has huge upside, but he's still young. And as soon as I saw his name in the lineup, I thought to myself, that's a mistake. That should be Kellen Acosta. Now, there's people out there that are going to say, oh, Busio's in Europe, Acosta's in Major League Soccer. Yeah, that's fundamentally true. But Acosta has much more experience, and he has that nastiness, that gamesmanship that Weston McKennie has. And I thought that in the midfield in particular, that was missing, and that was a huge mistake. And for example, on Friday, Adams, Musa, and McKennie had 224 touches. Tonight, Adams, Musa, and Busio only had 164. Thanks, Paul Carr, for that stat. Point being is that there was a missing work rate, engine, nastiness, grit, physicality that was absent in the midfield from McKennie. Kellen Acosta could have brought that if he would have started instead of Busio, who was, frankly, invisible and was not up for the occasion, in my opinion.
Yeah, Steve, I think if there was one really shocking thing that took place tonight was that he played Busio the entire game, and I was surprised at the substitution of Musa for Busio, which then got me thinking about Berhalter's responsibility about cycling player through, not expecting him to play two entire games because they got club things to do. I have to assume that played into it, considering Busio really didn't play or didn't play at all against Mexico.
Yeah, you would certainly think so. I think that substitution confused a lot of people, but as you very accurately point out, we don't know everything that's going into all of these. We don't know if Musa was maybe carrying a little bit of an injury. We did see his influence wane a little bit, but yeah, man, I completely agree with what Buzz was saying in terms of what McKennie brings. You know, he brings what Jermaine Jones used to bring, which is just this this fearlessness. It's contagious. You know, you walk into the hotel, you get off the bus, you see that guy. It's like, you know, when you're walking through kind of a tough part of town and you got a tough friend with you, you feel okay. And I think he does bring that. And I think Sebastian Legette could have brought some of that, but I completely agree that Kellen Acosta has I don't think he's quite McKennie there. Maybe he's about two-thirds, three-quarter McKennie as far as that goes, but I think Kellen Acosta could have helped there in that regard. By the way, I don't really think it hurt them until they got punched in the face, and then I thought they really, really missed exactly what Buzz was talking about.
Yeah, Will Parchman was on the Mexico post-game podcast, and he made, at the time I thought it was kind of funny, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought it was really, really smart and good, which is he made the comparison that Weston McKennie is kind of a weird mix of Jermaine Jones and Michael Bradley.
And Clint Dempsey.
And Clint Dempsey, yeah. You could probably throw a little, you know, spice, a shaker of Clint Dempsey in there, too. And that leads me to this question, which is, I have been saying for a while that I think Tyler Adams is Berhalter's most important player. But based on this performance today and what we saw against Mexico, I may be back to feeling like maybe Weston McKennie is his most important player on his roster.
Well, I would say depending on the game. For an away CONCACAF game, I would say Weston McKennie. For a match where you need a little bit more midfield control, I would think it maybe is Tyler Adams.
Yeah. Buzz, tactically, the way the teams were set up and the way the game kind of worked out, why don't you talk through that, or what you, how you feel about how Jamaica paired up against the United States? Because these were very, very different games, Friday and Tuesday's matchups.
Yeah, very different. You just can compare Jamaica style to Mexico style. You know, there are some cliches involved in these two national teams, but they're cliches for a reason. Mexico is going to want to possess the ball. They're going to pass it around. They're going to try and break you down with good sequences and that kind of play. Jamaica has a lot of guys with a lot of verticality. They want to play a more vertical British style of soccer. That is their biggest influence. They have half their team sometimes plays in England. Not even in the EPL. Sometimes it's in the lower thumpet divisions of England. So there's a very clear tactical difference there. I thought you could look at some of the choices Berhalter made or kept in the lineup to bring pace to deal with the way Jamaica played. I really liked that Berhalter continued most of the lineup over. The only changes he was forced to make were because of the suspended players, the guys that he lost. And I really like that they wanted to play, and the U.S. wanted to play, and Berhalter wanted to play the same style when they had the ball. I appreciate the fact that you think you're good enough to dictate the terms of the game. And I think that's true up until that bomb that went off that completely changed the nature of the game. And then at that point, put the U.S. back on its heels, and they struggled to get back on the front foot, as we like to say, and be the protagonist after that. And that's where the mentality comes in and the toughness comes in. And the fact that this is a very, very young team, they lacked the fortitude or the experience mentally to be able to turn it back on and become the progressive team they were for the first 15 or 20 minutes or so, or whatever it is. So I liked a whole lot of what Berhalter did. I liked the fact that they wanted to try and dictate. I thought that some of the guys he kept in were guys that would be able to handle what would be a more vertical style from Jamaica. And because they used that, some of that style from their own side against Mexico, because they like to do that to Mexico. They like to make Mexico run and play into their terms. And so Jamaica, again, they wanted to make Jamaica play into their terms because they're less vertical than Jamaica.
Yeah, and the thing that everybody should remember is that you had a spine featuring how the world Chris Richards is already 21 years old is beside me. That blows my mind. He's already 21, and he's the oldest of the three I'm getting ready to mention. Is that, and then in front of him is Busio, who is 19, and then Pepe, who is 18, and then it also dawned on me that Yunus Musa is also only 18. That is an amazing stat that I continue to don't think that gets talked about enough because of the realities of how many other national teams, not just in CONCACAF, but globally, are running out of spine with essentially teenagers flowing through it. Steve?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. Average age, 22 years, 341 days, and those guys that you just mentioned, important parts. So, yes, I think that all needs to be played into the context of what we just saw, which, again, was a talented team that maybe didn't respond well to crisis. But, you know, look, that's what young people do. You know, you've got to learn how to do that. You've got to learn how to manage moments. So with all this good young talent, you either have to handle that one of two ways. You have to balance it with just a little bit of been there, done that, and, you know, if Greg Berhalter were to throw somebody like Michael Bradley or Josie Altidore on the field, I think the lynch mob would fly immediately down to Jamaica and hang him on the spot, right? You know, it's you can't do it that way. So the other way you have to accept, the other way you approach it is you just accept that there's going to be some lessons in there that they're going to have to learn, that this team will have to grow into its own feet on. And by the way, Buzz used the word fortitude. Man, I'm jealous. I wish I'd use that word because it's the perfect word for what was lacking in this game. But again, I don't blame them. It's a very young team. You have to learn that stuff individually, and you have to learn it as a group, I think.
Yeah, how much do you think the lack of fans and atmosphere played into the performance tonight and the overall kind of chill vibe of the game?
That's a good point. I think you'd have to ask the players about that. You would have thought it would assist the United States a little bit, and not having that, those guys well, I was going to say right on top of you, but it's a weird field anyway because you have that weird track and velodrome. You know,
is that a velodrome? I thought it was a like a miniature NASCAR track that's outside the
running
track.
You know what? I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not sure exactly what the – who knows what those crazy Jamaicans use it for. But the fact is that the fans aren't right on top of you. But you're still away. You don't feel as comfortable. It is still not a field that's conducive to your best playing style. So those are things that you all have to work through.
Yeah, the field plays like it's like a bog. It doesn't look terrible, but man, that ball just doesn't want to roll very far. And there were a couple of really butt clenching moments, some back passes to Stefan that didn't go there quickly enough, and some missed passes that I think are somewhat field related. Buzz, let's talk a little bit about Timothy Weah, who I think is maybe the one real shining star that came out of these two particular games. He's the kid that I think probably most average fans don't know much about, but certainly had their eyebrows raised based on his performance on Friday and again today.
Well, he's a phenomenal top-tier player. I mean, obviously, the club he's at should tell you something. The pedigree in terms of the lineage should tell you something. It's a real gift that he plays for the United States because he easily could not have. I mean, I know he's basically from New York, but, you know, he might have felt a pull to his father's native country easily enough. So what an extraordinary thing it is to have that guy. And in particular for me, he gives a dimension to the U.S. among the players Berhalter uses now. He gives a dimension to the U.S. that Pulisic or Aronson or Jesus don't bring. It's more of a traditional high right winger type style most of the time. Now, he can come inside, and he does, sorry. But it's a very different kind of style than the other guys, and sometimes that imbalance can really help a team keep the opposition defense off its on its heels. You know, if you're switching sides through the run of play, if one guy's coming at you inside, outside in as a false kind of winger, and the other guy's going inside out as a regular kind of type of winger, that alternative styles can really help play into your hands. And so what a weapon he is for the United States. And he's got enough tools that even though he's still relatively inexperienced, his tools are so good that he's a dynamic, game-changing, game-breaking kind of player that you really need that if you want to try and compete at the very highest level. He's one of those components that the U.S. will need if they think they're going to go to whatever the next level is.
All right, Steve, we're going to talk about Antonio's worldie here in a second, but I do feel bad for Timothy Weah because in its own way, his goal tonight to open the game was equally good in just a kind of a whole different way, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I also want to mention it was Ricardo Pepi's combining that sort of broke open that play, and it was right after Weah had switched with Aronson, so he's on his less familiar left side, and so that adds into it too. And the thing with Weah is he's 21 years old now, and it seems like we've been waiting for this version of Timothy Weah since he was about 17 or maybe even 18 years old, somewhere around in there. And he's only now really beginning to the ceiling that we all thought he had. And, of course, injuries through the years have had a lot to do with that. And I think the other thing to say is that the reason, for me, one of the reasons he's approaching that ceiling, and he's had two good games here, is the other guy that I think a lot of U.S. fans, if they weren't familiar with the national team, they're coming out of this set of two matches saying, Musa who? Who is this guy? Because that kid in the middle, in combination with Weah, man, I think they're really good because it's a really good inside-outside combination. And I think that Tyler Adams' ability to get Yunus Musa the ball in the right spots at the right time, that's really big with midfielders, you know. Not just get him the ball at the right spots, get the attackers the ball in the right spots, get it to him at the right time. And Musa can wiggle out of traffic, as we saw against Mexico. It's funny because I just put in my notes on this game, Musa's ball security is elite. And right then he lost the ball twice. So he's still got some, you know, some young player in him. You said it yourself. He's 18 years old. But, man, that right side over these two games with Weah and Musa, young, dynamic, always a threat. And, you know, for me, that's why somebody like Reggie Cannon, maybe you put Reggie Cannon back there. And I thought Yedlin played okay. DeAndre Yedlin had played okay. But You know, now you can take somebody that's just a really good lockdown defender and put them on that right side and say, we've already got enough attacking oomph up that side. Now we just need a lockdown defender on that side.
Yeah, Musa, to me, has what I call kind of a Pogba quality to him, where he's so confident on the ball that he, in my opinion, sometimes allows players to pressure him in really weird spots, and he probably gets a little overconfident in those situations and occasionally loses it. But that's like nitpicking on what is just pure quality and smoothness. And man, him and Adams and McKenny together on Friday night against Mexico. I went back and watched the game. That is arguably the best overall midfield play I think I've ever seen the United States put out as a game product in all the years I've been watching this team. It was really, really top notch. Steve, you actually mentioned Ricardo Pepi. Again, I still am having a hard time wrapping my brain around the concept that Ricardo Pepi started in these two World Cup qualifying games. Something I would have laughed at your face if you had told me this 8 months ago. And I do wonder how, you know, I initially thought after Mexico he didn't play very well. But on the rewatch, he actually played better than I gave him credit for initially. I'm wondering, Buzz, what you think about Ricardo's performance tonight in Jamaica.
Well, we've talked many, many times about how Ricardo is not the kind of striker that he can just go pick up the ball somewhere and then take on like five dudes and score. He's a striker that needs service. So if you have to get the ball into the box where he can poach it and take advantage and score. They did not do that enough against Jamaica, which is why he didn't have enough opportunities. His record for scoring is like 1 in 3 shots on target. So you got to get him the ball in there to let him get it on goal. What I thought he was particularly good about in this game was he almost started displaying some false nine capabilities. And we know that Berhalter likes a false nine. He likes Jesus in that role. So he was showing a little bit of that, and that he was coming back to midfield, as Steve alluded to, and he was playing layoffs and he was playing check backs and he was opening that space for Weah to get into, for Aaronson to dribble into, and then checking back in and recovering and getting back into his position as a high nine. So the ability for Pepi to do both is really exciting. People are just going to have to understand that you can't expect him to carry the game in the respect that he's like McBride that way, where like if you don't get the ball into McBride, he's not going to score. You know, it's not like Pulisic was beating five dudes. So I thought Pepi was exactly the player I always expect him to be. I thought his movement was terrific. I thought that his movement continues to put center backs under stress in every game that he plays with the United States. And that's his key ability for me. And I thought he was right on par, even though he didn't score. I thought he was right on par for his game.
Yeah, I thought Pepi for 20 minutes, again, different game for the first 20 minutes. I thought his hold-up play was absolutely perfect. And as Buzz just said, coming back a little further, checking into balls, and by the way, guys like Weah and Musa are the kind of guys that can really work off of that. You know, you look at how Jesus Ferrer plays for FC Dallas. He wants to collect the ball, get a look up, make a nice pass, which is fine. He's just different, a little different style of player. You know, maybe he can combine as he gets a little closer to goal, whereas Musa, Weah, they want to play off of Pepi and go. You know, and so that was really working, again, for 20 minutes. Now, once the United States got that goal scored on them and they really lost the midfield and they lost the ability to move the ball through the midfield, then Pepi became invisible because the approaches into Pepi weren't working. And the cross, and then if you can't approach the final third, you're not getting crosses in, and that's the other thing that he's very good at. So after that, I don't know which forward would have been able to do much. And I listened to the guys on Paramount after the Guchanyewu and Charlie Davies, Clint Dempsey, that crew, and they were all sort of in agreement that it wasn't that Pepi was invisible, it was that after a certain amount of time, Pepi just wasn't getting any service at all.
You know, Steve, you're pretty close to the team and everything with your relationship as the TV broadcaster, and you've been around Ricardo a lot. I've put a lot of thought into just trying to absorb his reality of the season he's just had, the choices he's made, the changes in his life, the fact that, you know, he's along with all of these crazy things that have been going on, he's in the middle of trying to figure out where he goes next in terms of, you know, his future as a professional. And I can't quite I can't quite calculate in my head how an 18-year-old manages all of that pressure and now is also to ask is to play for his national team in these very, very important games. And you spend time around him. I'm just wondering if you, like Buzz, feel like he's just a weird freak in nature and completely capable of compartmentalizing all that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Pete. I don't think he's a weird freak of nature. I think that, and by the way, I don't want to tell you that I'm super close to the kid. You know, it's not like we're, you know, we're going to eat barbecue together, you know, twice a month or anything. But it's Lucci would tell me this, and Marco Ferruzzi told me this. Through it all, what they would say is he's the same kid. He wants to go play soccer. He wants to go score goals. And I think it's not a freak of nature just to have that ability to compartmentalize and to just be the kid that wants to go play soccer. You know, I think you, Buzz and Peter, you're probably that kid. You just want to go play soccer. Mm-hmm. And so you're not worried about all the noise out there. You do have the ability to say somebody else is going to take care of that or not even to think about it. You're just excited for your next chance to go score a goal. And I think that's who he is. And if you can be that person and remain that person, and that's the impressive thing, he's been able to remain that person, all you want to do is, when are we practicing? Okay, I'll be there. What's game time? Okay, I'll be there. Well, how am I going to score a goal? And then you're mad at yourself when you don't score as many as you thought.
Now, I don't want to spoil this because typically we'd save this to the end of the pod. I'm just going to I'll sneak peek this. My man of the match, and I think it's not even close, is Walker Zimmerman. And he is, by the way, to me, the breakout star of these two games. And it's a guy, obviously, that got drafted by Dallas, played 3 years here in Dallas before getting traded and then traded again. But man, what an absolute pair of rock solid performances. I think if you were to take the two games and somebody that played in both games, am I wrong in saying he probably grades out higher than anybody else over the course of the two games?
Well, I'm not exactly grading the players, but I certainly think he had two phenomenal performances. I think that Walker is a guy who has a proven track record of playing at a very specific high level. So you know that he's mentally tough. You know that you can count on him. And so he's a very easy guy for a coach to lean in on, particularly when you're probably going to have to start, you know, Richards next to him, who's still needs a lot of polish and is very inexperienced. So I agree that over those two games, there probably wasn't a guy that helped himself more than Walker Zimmerman. Now, is he now first choice? I don't know. That's going to be something only Bearhalter can really answer. But I definitely think that he's put himself really high up the rankings of center backs, you know, in this U.S. pool now that Bearhalter leans upon and will be relying upon certainly through the rest of qualifying. And it'll be a much shorter roster, of course, when we go to the Doc World Cup. But, you know, you're right. Sometimes you go into these two or three game sets and a singular guy really will take advantage, you know, and really elevate himself. And I certainly agree that Walker was probably that guy or close to that guy in this tournament.
Yeah, he was my man of the match as well. I put that on Twitter. For one thing, Pete, he was the perfect player for this match. You knew that Jamaica was going to go vertical. You knew that they had a physical presence. And that's his. That's right up his alley, the ability to go win balls. So that was perfect. The other thing I'll say about him is he was only added to the last camp because of an injury. And it happens every sport, all levels. You get your opportunities, man, you better take advantage. And he took advantage. And Berhalter talked about that before the game, before one of these last two games, saying that, hey, he came in because of an injury. You know, we want players. We didn't select him before. We want players to prove us wrong. He did exactly that, and here we are. And I completely agree that you know, before we would have said John Brooks is you know, the starter, and it's just who we start next to him. And now I think that's into question. And by the way, going back to Pepe, just real quick, and speaking of injury, you know, when you said 8 months ago, if you'd said, you know, whatever about Pepe and starting for the national team, look, Josie Altidore fell completely off the table in form. Daryl DK had a run of bad form. Jesse Zardes got hurt. You know, these things, if they're not falling into place, I'm not sure Pepe would have gotten the opportunities that he has gotten so far. same thing. He took advantage. So it's that's just a big part of it. You get your chances, man. You better take advantage because you don't know when the chance is coming again.
Yeah, his performances over the course of these two games, in my mind, and maybe this is hyperbolic, were so good. It does make me wonder if Nashville is going to field some phone calls from clubs overseas for his services in the offseason. Because
I guess so. But he's what is Walker, 26, 27, something like that. I mean, he may
is he
be
that
past
old already.
That. I'm not looking at a peep, but he may sort of be past that. But okay. I've always been a Walker Zimmerman fan. He was my pick for Defender of the Year last year in Major League Soccer. I put him on my best 11 this year. And what Bob Bradley was doing when he let him go to Nashville, and now look, their defense fell completely apart this year. So there's something out there. You know, Dallas let him go kind of easily. Bob Bradley let him go too easily. There's something there. I don't know what it is, but I see value in the guy. There's something there that some teams, some coaches maybe think is missing. I just don't know what it is.
Well, now I feel really old. Somehow Walker Zimmerman is 28, Steve.
Well, there you go.
Okay, maybe he won't. Maybe Nashville won't be getting phone calls from Europe, but I'm more bummed out to find out that Chris Richards is 21 and Walker Zimmerman is almost 30 years old. Holy cow. Let's talk about Chris Richards a little bit. Another FC Dallas product, obviously was sold to Bayern, is playing for Hoffenheim, and gets his first start in a World Cup qualifier. Quiet, pretty solid, I think. Did I miss any glaring errors on Chris's part tonight? Because I don't think the defense was really an issue for the United States tonight overall. Was it, Buzz?
Well, the handball was a pretty glaring problem. Not that it was called.
Which handball?
Chris Richards.
Oh, you thought that was a handball?
Well, I don't know that I thought it was a handball, but I certainly thought that there are lots of times where the referee might think that was a handball. There was a little chicken wing there. I don't know that I'm convinced, but if they'd have called it, I wouldn't have complained about it. But what I wanted to say about Richards is you can see, for me, when I watch him play, I can see all the tools that are going to make him a spectacular player that just need polishing. I see a player that needs lots and lots and lots of games. You know, that's the reason why he's smart to say, I want to go back to Hoffenheim, I believe that's who it is, because I'm playing there and I need to play there. And he totally gets that. And he's right. These kind of moments, and this is something I actually thought about when I was talking about Bearhalter, when I thought, well, maybe one or two of these decisions I might have made differently. But then I thought, if you're a coach that's super confident in your gig, you're top of the table, maybe a tie is fine. Maybe this is a chance for me to play and bring off the bench some guys that are a little bit younger and have them get this taste of this road Jamaica thing, this road CONCACAF thing. And I still got a pretty good chance to come back and win this game because I'm bringing in Pulisic. I'm bringing in Kellen Acosta, but I can also leave on Busio and let him play through this and leave on some other player, Aronson, and leave on Richards and try and progress these guys that you think down the line might be really important for you. And I would include Richards in that. So not always can you only make decisions in the moment when you're a coach. Sometimes you have to think big picture. And this might have been one of those games in some ways that we don't know about. He might never admit to. And having watched Chris Richards come through the FC Dallas Academy for a year, it's a joy watching his progression and how much better he is now than he was when he came through, and how all the things that we saw that we liked at the time have progressed. And so it's a lot of fun to see him becoming the player that eventually I think he will be.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Jamaica, who, I don't feel like I was any sort of Nostradamus when I said sometime in August or September that it would just be the U.S.'s luck that they'd start to get all these English Premier League players joined in on the team right about the time the U.S. played them in Jamaica. And while they did present a lot of danger and troubled the United States, the goal by Antonio, if I see somebody else tell me that that Stefan should have saved that, I'm going to start taking drugs, because I don't know how anybody thinks that Stefan had any shot at saving that worldie of a gold. Please tell me, Steve, you agree with me.
You know, I do. What I will say.
Oh, no.
No. I think it's a pretty, I hope it's a pretty safe middle ground. I don't know if anybody could have saved it. I will say Matt Turner would have had a better chance at pulling off the spectacular and saving it. Is that kind of make sense? I'm not saying he would have saved it, but he would, he might have had a little better chance. I don't think Stephanie got a good early jump on that, and I think maybe Matt Turner has just a little bit more reach. But but never mind all that. It was a hell of a shot, and most goalkeepers, only the best goalkeepers in the world were going to even have a chance of saving it, I think.
Yeah, and it's one of those deals where people want to point at a goalkeeper, and I always look back and go, maybe you shouldn't have let them get to that point to shoot the ball in the first place. And it was, surprisingly, a lot of Tyler Adams taking some odd angles and overrunning when he was trying to run off Antonio and he got cut on. It just was a great shot. And for those who don't know, Mikel Antonio is one of the best strikers in the Premier League right now, playing for West Ham. Jamaica is so lucky to have added his stuff to the game, to their game. I think it just makes them better, and it obviously makes the CONCACAF better to have somebody of that quality in there. But that's not just some random dude hitting worldies. That is like a legit world-class striker playing for Jamaica now. And, of course, he just happened to start his first time or one of his first times up against the United States.
Yeah, and that shot, by the way, that was 34 yards. I mean, Tyler Adams didn't maybe he didn't cover himself in glory, but I didn't see much that he did wrong. Most goals, you look at it and you say something went wrong somewhere. Man, the defending there, you want to be close to somebody at 20 yards, of course, 22 yards. You want to be very close to somebody, to a world-class striker. You got to be touch tight when they're within 12 yards. Man, at 34, 35 yards, I mean, you know, Tyler Adams, he's there. You know, he gives him basically, a two-foot separation.
Yeah.
He takes there's one touch to his right foot, and the ball just happens to bounce up a little bit so he can really lay into it. So I don't think Tyler Adams, my opinion, Tyler Adams didn't do much wrong there either.
All right. Overall, Steve and I, Buzz, said that we thought Zimmerman was man of the match. Do you have anybody different that you'd like to throw out there?
I mean, I can't argue with that, but Awea certainly was phenomenal. I thought that they did not have an answer for him. So I could have made a case that he was the guy, but I can't argue with Zimmerman. Either one of those guys would be fine for me.
Steve, anybody else out of the two games that changed their stock in the United States national team by any great degree, other than the ones we've already mentioned for you?
No, I can't really. I didn't think Anthony Robinson particularly distinguished himself particularly well. I don't think he did. I don't think he was terrible, but you know, for me, left back is still a little bit of an open position. And I'll go back to Chris Richards just real quick and tell you that I don't think he had a good game tonight.
Oh, okay.
I think as he gets on a plane or wherever he's sitting eating pizza right now in Kingston, Jamaica, or on the team bus or whatever, I don't think he's thinking he had a good game either. I think he's thinking about, that one short back pass. I think he's thinking about the handball, which, by the way, probably a handball for me. Not the most obvious one ever.
Wait,
but probably
hold on. I want to make sure we're talking about the same thing and I didn't miss it. Are you talking about the one where – are you both talking about the one in the first half where he was leaning in and it came off his sleeve?
Yep, because he moves toward the ball. And so that's the debate. You know, yes, his arm is tucked in, but at the moment you move toward the ball, for me, that makes it that makes it a handball.
Okay,
but it's a debatable
one. Well, the only thing I want to throw in there is I thought the rule had clearly changed to draw a line of the definition of the arm at the bottom of the sleeve, and that clearly hit him towards the top of his arm and the shoulder and hit all sleeve. So that's why I didn't think it was a handball, along with being up against his body. But maybe I'm just being too granular about it.
Yeah, like it's okay. It's a worthy debate. But I just thought that Richards, there are three moments that could have cost them. And I think in 4 years from now, Chris Richards, for all the reasons Buzz just laid out, I think he's much, much better. 2 years from now, if they're playing, they're not going to play a qualifier in Jamaica in 2 years, of course. But 2 years from now, whatever game he's playing, you know, this was his first time really being thrown into the breach, and you know, understandably, he didn't distinguish himself that way. But again, he got to learn some lessons tonight, and he got to feel that atmosphere and understand the importance of every single moment without really having to suffer because they come away with a point. So to Buzz's point, big picture, I think it's a win, but I think he will have much better nights.
Okay, while we're talking controversy, let's talk about probably the most controversial moment of the game, which was the disallowed goal. It appears off a corner kick that Jamaica has scored a winner, or at least a very late goal that might put them in a position to win the game. But then the whistle is blown and a foul is called for somebody pulling, or I don't know how you want to describe it, Walker Zimmerman. I'll go with you first, Steve. Steve, was that the correct call?
No. Goal. Should have been a goal. Really? By the way, somebody on Twitter called me out for saying Zimmerman was man of the match when he got beaten on the goal. True enough, but it's also that they're zoning in that moment. Zimmerman's a free man, so I wouldn't say he's... Yes, he was beaten, but it wasn't like he was marked. That was his marking assignment. But, yeah, very soft call. Unfortunate for Jamaica. Kind of felt bad for Jamaica because, man, that's a goal for me.
Buzz?
I actually... when that corner kick happened, I heard a whistle right after he kicked the ball. And I said to my wife, literally pointed out, was that just a whistle? And then the ball went in the goal. So unless the referee has said that he called that on Walker Zimmerman, I'm not 100% sure that that's the foul, because I watched that play and I don't really see a foul. So I wondered if there wasn't something in the box before that, in the getting ready to take the kick, that he was calling the foul in the same place, and he actually blew the whistle as the kick was taken. Because I heard a whistle, maybe it's from the stands. So for me, I think there's still something to be determined, and maybe there's an answer on the internet somewhere that I haven't heard yet. Maybe it is Zimmerman that he got called. But either way, I don't think Zimmerman was fouled. I think he just got beat. Hmm. And I think the foul might actually have been somewhere else. That's my take.
Well, that's now, Buzz, I tell you what, Buzz. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Peter, but if you watch that replay from the behind the goal, you will see the referee. That's interesting what you said, and maybe I'll go back and look for that. But if you watch, the referee is looking right at Zimmerman, right at the header, and he raises his. You see him raise the whistle and blow it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah, see, yeah. And to that point, Steve, that's why I think it was the correct call. Now, would I agree that that type of stuff happens all the time and doesn't get called in a variety of games, and probably even in this game in particular? But the referee, you know, look, I really believe that referees, when they are in the right position and they're looking at things in real time, they see things in a way that you just don't see them on television. And I also throw in the fact that Walker Zimmerman had won every single aerial ball that came his way the entire game, and it mystifies me somehow Walker wasn't able to jump up and outbeat somebody to that ball. I think he was held, and I think he was held more than you can see from the video evidence, but I think the referee sees it, and the way he calls the foul is so immediate and so absolute that I think the referee sees something that we can't, and I do think it was the right call. So there you go.
Hard to argue the points you just made, because you're right. I did have the same thought. When I saw him pull the whistle up to his mouth so quick, it made me think exactly what you just said. Maybe there's something that we didn't see. We sort of see from that end zone, you know, an arm up, but maybe we don't see the push before the push, if that makes sense. And maybe that's something that he sees.
Yeah. Pay a little bit attention to Walker's body language. Maybe he's selling it a little bit, but he's such a guy that is so determined to win every head ball, and he so badly misses that. There's just something else in there that I think we're missing. I don't know. Maybe I'm making it up because I'm a homer. I don't know. Buzz, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say that I immediately thought of the World Cup when the U.S. referee, Essie, was called that PK, that everyone else in the whole stadium was like, you're out of your mind. And then they finally found the one angle that showed it, and he was exonerated. And so I immediately thought, yeah. And everyone was like, he was very confident when he made the call. And so my thought with this is, if he was very confident in making this call, maybe there's something he's seeing standing 10 feet away that we're not seeing on the camera. It's entirely possible. So, like, until you get a quote from the referee explaining what he called, we're just guessing what the call was.
Steve, because we don't have you on the kick around very often, I'm going to ask you first, if you were, and maybe this is too difficult to do because you don't know who the opponent is, but do you have in your mind a solid starting 11 for the United States national team at this point?
Not really, because of what you just said. And man, it just really... form, it plays into it more than I think a lot of people want to admit. You know, there's somebody, there's a lot of conversation right now about MLS players versus European players, and it's like people don't understand. Well, you know, this guy is not playing very well, or he's not playing at all for his team, which, by the way, is indicative that he's probably not playing very well, or he's carrying an injury or whatever. So I think it's pretty safe to say that the midfield looks to me like it's Adams, McKinney, and Musa. I don't think that changes a lot. But see, now you start talking about center back. Well, I don't know. Is John Brooks in better form than he says he's in bad form right now? Where's Sergino Dest? I think he's probably a starter, but is he on the left or right, depending on who else is they have and who's in good form and what kind of player do they need? A lockdown defender on the right side, and they need more of attack up the left, and you play Sergino Dest over there. Maybe Moose is gone, and or somebody else isn't available, and so you need a little bit more attack on the right, so you put them on the right. But anyway, we could go on in the weeds there. But the three in the midfield are the only ones that I see right now, and then Christian Pulisic at one of the positions, depending on who else is available.
You cut out for a second. Throw in Giovanni Reyna as part of the difficulty of that mix. Because did you mention that, by the way?
I did not mention, but that's a great one. But now you start talking about, okay, Gio Reyna and the way he plays, is he going to be better than Timothy Weah? And you start having a conversation about that. Okay, but who's in a better form and what's the matchup look like? Because now with Weah coming on, is Gio Reyna, in you guys' mind, is he an automatic starter?
Well, not right now because he hasn't been playing, but when he's in form, I do think it makes a really difficult – I think it really makes things difficult for Berhalter, don't you, Buzz?
I think that the pool is narrowing. I agree with Steve in that even in a World Cup with just three games, you won't see the same 11 for three games. There's never going to be like a 100% lock. But the pool is getting smaller and smaller and smaller as Berhalter weeds out players. Certainly Gio Reyna will be absolutely in the discussion for any given game, but modern tactics, matchups, conditions, where how many points you have, all that's going to come into play as you talk about the World Cup. So it's really only in a vacuum that you can make like here's a definitive lineup question, but you don't ever play games in a vacuum, so it's kind of a moot point. I will say that my answer to the question of what player helped themselves the most over these two games? The answer is Weston McKennie. First by his performance against Mexico, and then by his missing against Jamaica. I think that his stock for me went up the most. Not that I wasn't already really high, but there's two answers for you in the space of one.
Okay, before we wrap everything up, I'm interested in knowing, Steve, your thoughts overall of your Berhalter temperature. Are you running pretty mild or hot or cold on Greg at this point?
They are in position to qualify for the World Cup. They've pretty much done what they've needed to do in terms of home games. They've got 5 points out of four home match, 5 points out of four road matches. Last time during the complete cycle, they only got 3 points out of five road matches. Generally on Berhalter, I see some things I like and I see some things I don't like, but as of right now, he's doing the job he was assigned to do, which is get the United States to the World Cup.
Buzz?
Same place I always have been. For me, soccer managers is mostly about man management, and I think Berhalter is pretty good at that aspect. I think that's even more true of the national team when a lot of it is about gauging the temperature of players. What kind of form are you in? What kind of health are you in? Can I develop a relationship where you'll really tell me how you're feeling? Develop a trust level. You can bring guys in and out of the pool and not have them lose their minds and get upset. Guys that'll fight for you. I think all that stuff Berhalter is doing exceptionally well with. He does occasionally have tactical things I don't always agree with. I think he tends to overthink things a little bit, but I go back to that famous quote about it being 70% man management, 30% tactical. I totally agree with that with the national team. So I think he's killing it on the man management side. So I think he's doing exactly what I expected him to be, which was to run a good pool of players and get us through qualifying.
All right. At the time of us recording this, right now, it's essentially halftime of the two games in action, Panama's El Salvador. By the way, El Salvador scored 15 seconds into the game, I'm seeing on Twitter, to take a 1-0 lead, and that's where they're at as they head into halftime. And Costa Rica and Honduras in Costa Rica are at 1-1 at this point. Now, the big game tonight kicks off a little after 8 o'clock. By the time people are listening to this, it'll probably be over with. Canada and Mexico, and the scenes in Edmonton are glorious. It is at wind temps of like 5 degrees. It is still snowing in Edmonton. It makes me wonder if the Mexicans will even come out for warm-ups, as they did not back in the original Dos a Zero game. That'll be a really fun one to watch tonight. Steve, you'll be tuned in for that, right?
Oh, man, it's bringing back memories of the first Dos a Zero. I was there for that one. Bring back memories of the...
At Dos a Zero, too?
I've been to four of them. That was the first one that I was at. Yeah. They had set up a temporary press box outside. Old Columbus Crew Stadium was tiny, so they sent up a temporary auxiliary press box, is what we call it, aux box, and it's just a tent. And I was so cold.
It was
my
coldest.
Hands were so cold that I could barely type. I couldn't type a story. But I was also at the Snow Classico. It's bringing back great memories.
All right. So the other interesting thing to think about, the next window, which is in the end of January, beginning of February, the United States has two home games in the three and one away game. They host El Salvador on the 27th. Then they go to Canada on the 30th, and I don't know, Andy was telling me, I think Andy thinks they're also going to play that one in Edmonton, the same place they're playing tonight, so that will be interesting. And then the U.S. ends the window by playing at home against Honduras. Buzz, that's a good set of games to look forward to coming up after. By the way, by that time, by the end of that window, we may know where Ricardo Pepi is playing his soccer in 2022.
Yeah, that'll be a fascinating selection of games, because you'll get a bit of the summertime flip-flop in the sense that MLS players, domestic players, will not be in mid-season form, but European players theoretically should be. You could, if you use more of the MLS players, you can get them into a more dedicated camp-like environment, or you can just use your guys that probably are in the mid-season peak. So again, man management from Berhalter. It'll be interesting to see which way he goes with that.
All right, Steve Davis, we don't have you on the kick around anywhere near enough, so I'm going to cede the floor to you if you have any additional thoughts or insights or bon mots that you'd like to share with the good P1s.
Not so much. I'm just watching the Mexico players walk out in Edmonton and just having a laugh about it, man.
Do they look miserable, or do they look like they're just trying to laugh it off?
Well, they sort of had a little triple screen going of all three qualifiers, what was happening in them right then. So you couldn't tell too much, but I think we can surmise that they're not having their best moments right now.
All right. Buzz, any final thoughts from you, sir? Jamaica 1, U.S. 1?
I think that, if we try and remember the mentality that's needed to advance out of CONCACAF, win home results, get a point on the road, grind out these difficult CONCACAF games. It doesn't matter how good you think you are. It's still difficult to go in and play in some of these places. You have to remember that it's a grind. I'm really pleased with where the U.S. is in terms of points. They put themselves in a good position. The work is not done. There's going to be some really important games coming up, but you have to like, on a whole, you get to like where the U.S. is after the last two cycles being so horrible.
Buzz Carrick, editor and founder of ThirdDegree.net. Please go check out his stuff. Thank you, Buzz, for joining us tonight.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
And the great Steve Davis. Dude, thanks for making time, joining in on doing one of these post-game pods. I really do appreciate you taking the time to do it. Thanks, man.
Happy to do it. It's a lot of fun.
And P1s, we love and adore you. Go in, go out, get stuck in, and win your 50s.